You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Loss. I'm Matt from Tennessee.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Matt from Tennessee. What parts of Tennessee are you at?
East Tennessee, close to Knoxville.
Knoxville. Okay. We're going to get some Knox out of this show today.
Bill. I suspect we might.
You might. So what do you do out there next to Knoxville?
I work as a supply tech at a hospital in town.
Oh, nice. Nice. Okay, good for you.
So yeah, I'm one of the people that takes the stuff up to the wards for the medical staff to use for what they need. So I do the replenishment.
Okay. And what's your background with Star Trek? Where did it all begin for you, and what do you like about it so much?
Well, I was 6 years old when Next Gen started, so my earliest memories are of, you know, watching, I think, around season three. The first episode I remember watching is Ensigns of Command, where Data is on the planet trying to convince the people to leave. That's the first episode I remember distinctly watching.
We must be the same age then. Because I would have been around. Super.
So, yeah. That's,
I'm always put to shame by people that have, you know, actual nice jobs that help people. So whether it's you or whether when Blair's on, I always really am put to shame that I'm really not doing anything for the social good of society.
Well, I didn't always. So this is a relatively new thing for me. But it's...
That's cool. At least, you know, you're doing something good, though. Yeah, like bringing Blair on, that way we can ask him some kind of medical question for a paramedic in the field.
Yes. Yeah, I really liked hearing some of the things he had to say. I listened to, I think, one or two of the shows that he was on.
Okay, that's cool. All right, so have you done any podcasts before, and if so, which ones?
I've only done one podcast before, and it was the Delta Quadrant, where we reviewed Star Trek Generations.
Really?
That was the only other podcast I've done, and that was good about 3 years ago. So I'm a little bit nervous. It's been a while.
So, Matt, overall, what are your thoughts on Generations? Like, thumbs up or thumbs down?
I liked it. I think I gave it a 3 out of 5 when I rated it. I mean, I liked the visual of the movie. Looking back at it now, it was the visual effects of it, you know, the seeing the Enterprise, it was so beautiful on the big screen. But I really thought the storyline was somewhat lacking. I mean, so it was a middle of the road kind of movie for me. But you know, still a good one though. I enjoyed it, but
I'm really looking forward to when we get to review it, Lou, because I was, Generations was the first film I saw in the cinema of a Star Trek film.
It was mine as well.
Yeah, and in particular, I remember that the release in the UK coincided with school holidays. So I had an entire week off. And I went back and I saw that film. I think I saw the film something like 18 times in the cinema. And I just remember going, I think on one day I did 3 back-to-back. I was absolutely obsessed with that for quite a while. And I think I really like it. And I know it's not a perfect film by any stretch of the imagination, But I really, really, really enjoyed it. And I have to say, I think that the first part, you know, the stuff set on the bee, I always thought that was absolutely great. Now, people since then have told me that, why is it Kirk that goes down to fix the thingy-majig on the deflected dish? And yes, it is true. It shouldn't be Kirk. But I still kind of really love that first opening.
I always thought that, too. I was like, shouldn't there be a staff down there that knows how to do this stuff? You know, there should be technicians already down there.
No, they don't. They don't come on till Tuesday.
Oh, right. That was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite memories of Star Trek, though, I told it on the other podcast too, but I'll tell it here. That I remember, I was Star Trek the Motion Picture had come on television, and I was watching. You know, I was watching it to begin with, and the only Star Trek I'd really known was Next Gen. So when it came on, I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are. Mm. So when Kirk came on the screen, I had to ask my parents. I said, "Who is that?" And they said, "Well, that's the captain." And I was like, "Why does he have all of his hair?" But I just didn't understand that that there was this whole history at the time.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, no, I get it. Okay, well, it's good to have you on, and hopefully you'll half enjoy this.
Well, I hope so too. I was a little bit surprised that it was the only episode left of the season that nobody else wanted to do, so I was a little suspect when I agreed to do it.
Right. Oh boy, what's the reason why, huh? I don't know why. Okay.
This episode's a perfectly fine episode. I think it gets a bad rap.
Yeah. I think so.
Perhaps.
Too. Yeah.
We'll get there.
All right, well, whenever you're ready, just continue on.
All right, so let me get back up here. Sorry, All right, the synopsis for tonight's show is, following the events of the previous episode, the crew of the Enterprise struggles emotionally with the loss they feel now that Wesley Crusher has left the ship. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, was I reading the wrong one?
I was going to say, that didn't sound right.
Ba-dum-bum. Uh-huh. All right. Sorry.
Funny.
Let me try it again. All right. The actual synopsis for tonight's show is, Counselor Troi loses her empathic powers. The Enterprise is slowly pulled off course by an unknown force existing in two-dimensional form into a deadly cosmic string. This is the 10th episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is December 31st, 1990. Written by Hilary J. Bader and directed by Chip Chalmers. Guest stars include Kim Braden as Janet Brooks, Mary Conert as Tess Allenby, and special guest star Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan. And Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So, what did we think of this episode?
We'll give a little brief synopsis of what you thought.
Well, my first viewing, I was a little put off by, I think, the performance of Deanna Troi.
Are you telling Deanna to go away?
No, I apologize. My daughter came over to see what I was doing.
Mm, no problem.
I thought that was you, Lou. I really thought it was you. You're telling one of your dogs to go away. Go away, go away.
Oh, I was talking to you, James.
Sorry. I told her I was going to be doing this, and I said, please leave. You know, when you hear me talking, don't come in here. And she did it anyway. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. You know how that goes. Should have just pulled her on.
Yeah. Well, she didn't watch the show. She's not a Star Trek fan.
It doesn't matter. You'd be surprised. I had my daughter on it one time. Okay.
So, okay. But, my first viewing, right, watching Troi, it was just one of those, I thought that she was just throwing a hissy fit the whole episode. So I was kind of put off by it. I had to watch it a couple times before I started really picking up on some of the underlying themes to it, and I actually appreciate it a little bit more than I did the first time, but yeah, it was a difficult one to get through.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah. James, what about you?
Well, I'm afraid there's a bit of a rambling story here.
Uh-oh.
Because I'm not entirely sure that this is a great episode, and I've got a couple of things that I'm going to call out. But I do know that we've had a bit of a gap between when we last recorded, Lou, and we always have this phenomena where by getting back into Star Trek after not having had a chance to watch Star Trek makes me more excited than I should be to watch these episodes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try my best to try to separate the idea of watching the Trek again and us actually reviewing this episode. I'm going to have to wait and see where I come down. Now, at the same time, it should be noted that this has been recorded, you know, kind of 2 weeks after pretty much the collapse of the UK government and the entire society that we're living in. And very similar to Spock in 09, I'm a little bit emotionally compromised, also having been ill this week. So I'm not entirely sure where I'm at. What are your thoughts, Lou?
Well, there is the loss. Oh, I guess that makes sense. Me, you're right. I'm the same thing, because it's kind of boring in a sense. And you know what happens when I start an episode saying I was just kind of bored? It's probably not going to get any better. Deanna, in one scene, says, "Jesus Christ, lady, he died a while back. Get on." That's what she's saying, though, is, you know, get on with it. You need to get it out and get it over with, for crying out loud. And then
in 5 months.
5 months. And then in the next scene, she loses her empathic powers for 10 minutes and is about ready to kill herself over it. It's just too traumatic. And it's, I got too much of a pity me thing from her, even in the middle of a crisis. You know, I'm sorry, I just can't do any good. When really it comes down to it, is that she was Wesley for this episode. She kind of saved the ship, even though she doesn't know how she would have, what she did to save the ship. But she had to learn from instinct. She had to come up with an instinct, and that's what drove the solution. So, okay, let's get into this. The loss. The loss's loss is our gain. So, I'm sure you'd like me to explain that. This is our first episode, as Matt said, without Wesley Crusher. So, already, it should not have been called the loss. It should have been called the gain.
But no, gain by losing, is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. We've gained by losing Wesley. I wonder how many people on the ship are scared that they're going to die now that the only person who could solve any emergency is gone.
Maybe. But by the way, was it clear on first run, because I don't recall this, that Wesley Clank was permanently gone rather than he has just gone to the academy for the purpose of a story arc, very similar to what happened to Nog or kind of like other people on other series? Did we know that he was gone for good?
Well, his name was taken out of the opening credits.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. I think even didn't Denise Crosby even get like a couple of shows where after she left, but they still kept her name in, I think, for the rest of the season. And I think Wesley gets it pulled straight away.
Right, because if I remember correctly, Denise Crosby was actually the death one was filmed one before the previous. Okay, it was filmed before the previous episode in which she saved some people, and that's that whole thing in the
symbiosis.
Yeah, the
symbiosis,
waves, right, and she does the wave. So I think that may be why she was probably still on. As far as original run, I think you're asking back then, was it just that Will Wheaton had left the show and they said he was going to the academy, or did somebody have some kind of forethought that he may come back on for 3 episodes? I don't remember. My guess is he left the show, because if I remember correctly, he's talked about it in the past. He's kicking himself in the ass for ever leaving that show. But then, you know, I think if I remember, what possibly may have happened was the audience, the fans wanted him back. And I guess leaving for the Academy was the possibility of him coming back. Killing him, on the other hand, you're done. But him coming back. And even if they would have went on to where he quit the Academy, he's still with the Traveler. So he could still have come back. Guess who came back? And so, you know, that's my thought on it.
Well, I'll admit, you know, like I said, I was pretty young growing up when the show was on. I actually liked Wesley. He was, you know, he was the stand-in for me on the show. You know, he was the kid I wanted to be. So, you know, I actually liked his character, and I was actually a little sad when he did leave, because, you know, I was actually a fan of his.
Well, I got to admit, at one time, I wanted to be, you know, my character, I wanted to be Deanna Troi's uniform, but it didn't work out that way. Doc is beside himself right now. What? Holy crap, dude, just say that. Yeah, he did. Okay, so anyway, let's go on. As we start out, Deanna is helping a crew member whose husband just died of some kind of accident, or he died, what, 5 months ago? And as we listen to the counseling session, I, you know, am I the only one that thought she just seems a little bit cold here?
Yeah, I could see that. It seemed like she was definitely pushing the ensign into that direction.
Now I have to say, I don't like the counseling sessions in this particular show. I don't think I think that they're trying to kind of allow the Troi character to kind of mirror her own journey in the sessions that they have with the other, you know, with the other woman. But there's a part of me that just feels that they're not really good enough. I'm not. I think that the thing that they put on is a little bit too simplistic, and I don't particularly care for the guest actress there. And there are a couple of sarcastic lines that I have written down in notes, which is, you know, there'll be places where I think someone asks Troi, well, how do you know? Well, Troi is a mind reader, so she probably does know, and she probably can find out fairly easily. I didn't really care for any of this.
Well, I mean, you know, the woman's trying. It seems like, you know, I've continued my duties. My painting has never been, I don't remember what she said, something isn't, you know, better than it's ever been before. Some people might have given up, but nope, not me, you know, or some people may not be trying at all. Well, what do you mean by that? And it just seemed like it was a little cold. Sometimes I would say, as a therapist, your job is to listen and then, you know, help her. But she just came pushy. That is until she got the music box, and then I thought that was just so cool. You know, they got. There's another thing. They got rid of everything. I just told them to take it all away. Well, they didn't get rid of everything. You know, she pulls out this music box. Maybe she could have saved a few other things too. You know, grandfather's necklace, something that, you know, of his that she would have liked to have had.
Yeah, that did seem weird to me. I was like, why would Troi have this music box? I mean, I understand that Ensign Brooks said, you know, just to get rid of it all. But does that mean that it's kind of free pickings for anybody to go in and take what they want? That seemed weird that Troi would actually have that with her.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and if the ensign's surprised by what Troi has, she better not walk into Geordi's quarters, because he's stacked up on all his coats and shoes and everything.
Everything of the guys. Yeah, Geordi took it all. Yes, and he wears them too on the holodeck. Speaking of the holodeck, is there really such a thing as fresh holodeck air? It'd do you good, Will. What?
What? I was going to ask about that too. Is the holodeck air different from the air on the ship?
It's fresh. I'd like to know, okay, here's another question. There has to be some kind of ventilation. We have never discussed this thing. But where does a holodeck get its air? I mean, does a computer create air and pump it into the holodeck? Or are they on the ventilation system? So if they're on the ventilation system of the ship, there's no such thing as fresh holodeck air.
But you can, I mean, if you do have control of the atmosphere, right, you can make the air, you know, what exactly do you mean by quote unquote fresh air anyway? I mean,
that's a question.
Realistically, you're probably talking about getting rid of a few toxins, making it to be relatively breezy and controlling the temperature. That's probably what you're talking about with quote fresh air. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think they certainly have the ability to do that within the holodeck, and they probably have the ability to make it different in the holodeck than elsewhere.
I was going to say they could probably do that in their quarters too. I mean,
yeah,
I could get some fresh holodeck air in my quarters, I would imagine.
So I wonder what the smell is in Wrecker's quarters. You know, what kind of fragrance does he have pumping through his air?
Well, I guess that depends if he's watching the little hologram things on his table anymore.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, or sometimes they watch him. Anyway, so when the ship encounters something strange on the sensors, that's when Deanna starts to begin to have one of her patented headaches. Oh, are you okay, Deanna? So Deanna pretty much passes out. I mean, she just drops, and then we go to the teaser. So, or the commercial. So what do you guys think of the teaser? We have no Wesley. Deanna's being a bitch. Sorry. Sort of. But then
it's not explicitly stated that there's no Wesley, right? They don't dwell on the fact there's no Wesley. They don't open up and say, tonight's show will feature no Wesley. Mm-hmm. Now, as you were.
Well, like I said, there's no Wesley. And Deanna just passed out and is laying on our floor. All in all, I'd say it's a pretty good teaser.
You're just watching this going, I like where this is going.
Yeah, this might be doing pretty good so far. But there is a hilarious moment just coming right back. How long will it take us to get somewhere? It'll take so many days, so many hours, and so many minutes. What? No seconds?
Yeah, I watched that. Like, well, what if there aren't any seconds? What if it was 0 seconds? Would he actually say that?
I would think he would. He's usually so precision precise, if that's a term, straight on to the last second. So I would say 0 seconds. Or, you know, just 1 second, just to toss one in.
I suppose. But he doesn't want to do that anymore because he finds that other people find it off-putting.
Yeah, right. So, okay, anything on that, James, before we go on?
No, carry on.
Okay, good. So what do we have Dr. Crusher triaging all the injuries. So Worf says there are only minor injuries, no damage. But yet, according to Dr. Crusher, when she finally made it to Deanna's quarters, oh, I'm just filled with head injuries. People fell all over the place.
Oh, going back to that real quick, when they actually did engage Warp, did it look to you like they popped the clutch on the Enterprise?
Must have been.
You know, he said engage, and then all of a sudden everybody lurched forward like somebody just, they popped the clutch and they stalled the ship.
Dang, you got it. I think that's it. See, Wesley wasn't there to engage the engines right. That's the whole problem. But they did that, so they got some kind of forward momentum. Thank God the dampeners didn't fail this week. The inertial dampeners didn't fail. That's because if they had fallen, it'd all be stains on the view screen. But, okay. So, you know, Deanna says she's dizzy, but doesn't know if she hit her head. And, you know, we were just talking about Blair because I think he'd probably agree that if someone's dizzy, it doesn't know if they hit their head, one of my first thoughts is going to be head injury.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, she lost her empathic powers. We don't know this yet, but she seems to have lost her empathic powers because in the conference, she reveals that she's just not able to sense anything. Nothing. You don't understand. Nothing outside. Nothing in here. You're all blank to me. So finally, she doesn't know that Riker's been undressing her for the last 10 minutes. In his mind, that is.
Well, he did give that knowing glance, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what tipped her off.
Riker? Yeah. Yeah, that exactly. Yeah, that's why she's always smiling whenever we see her, because she can hear Riker's thoughts or feel Riker's thoughts.
But I have it down here on my notes that, you know, this was the first instance where I thought that Troy's professionalism really took a hit in this episode. Right when they called them to the conference room and they stand up and Troy suddenly has that weird look while looking at Dr. Crusher. Right there, she just said she should have told the doctor, hey, wait a second, there is a problem here. I can't read you.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, she just shakes it off. Oh, it's nothing, it's nothing. And I was like, well, that's... Like, no, that's not the right thing you should be doing here.
Yes, but does Dr. Crusher really have cognitive thought? Maybe, you know, she really doesn't think well, very course, much.
No, of course she has cognitive thought. What a horrendous thing to say. But had you been a normal person and hit your head and then felt that, you know, you couldn't hear out of one ear, right? You would raise it to the doctor pretty quickly.
Well, yeah.
And if you believe that the empathic ability is like, you know, a sixth sense for the Betazoids, then you would have thought that she would raise it to the doctor, even if it's an incompetent doctor, which he's not.
Right.
So yeah, that was strike one, I thought.
Strike one. And then she goes into that, and then she finally says, well, you don't understand, you're all blank. And does... Is this at the point where Crusher finally gets to examine her?
Yes, right after that conference.
It's funny when they're all trying to explain how, you know, this will be okay, you'll be fine. Perhaps, maybe, it, you know, like they say, when someone loses one of their senses, the others get shut up. Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, it's funny,
But by the way, I really like the fact that she pulls Picard up on that, because I think it's correct to pull him up on it. And I would have feared that back in the 80s, or I don't know if this is a 1990 show, I should have checked, it is 1990.
Yeah.
But I would have thought that there might be too much kind of a step to it around this. I think it's very good that Troy pulls him up.
Okay. Here's a question.
Wesley.
No. No, Wesley. Oh, my God. That was like 20 minutes. No, we were talking, you were saying, you know, how she was right to call up Picard on what he was saying. And, you know, they say that.
Absolutely.
Okay, but let's reverse that. She's now in a counseling session with Geordi. His visor is kicked out, or not even that. No, let's go Ensign Brooks. Okay. Her husband died in the same accident she was in, and now she's blind. So now not only does she have to live without her husband, she has to live without her vision. What would she say to her about that? It seems like, you know, your other senses do grow stronger, so they say. It makes sense that you would point that out.
No, but the thing is, I think the difficulty here is that... you know, if you lose a sense, if you lose a leg, it's not that, you know, your other leg's going to become super strong and that's like a positive. It's that you have to be in a position to be able to adapt. And the way that you adapt probably does put more pressure on the other things that you retain. So if you do lose vision or if you do lose your hearing, then you do then get to use your other things and other ways to compensate. But I think the way that Picard was expressing it wasn't in terms of how do you overcome the challenge, but was instead, hey, now that you've lost this, you're going to become, you know, super strong woman, or you're going to have an incredible sense of smell, just almost, you know, by definition. And I think that there's a difference between having to work hard to adapt to your new life and being given superpowers because you've lost the use of a leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Picard was tripping on the latter a bit too much. And I think that's when people say, oh, you know, you've lost something, so something else is going to get stronger. I think they are. I do actually think there is an element of truth of what Troy says in terms of making people feel comfortable around his ability. because it kind of does make you feel comfortable, right? It, you know, of course, there are people that become accustomed to not having certain abilities that can do things, incredible things that, you know, able-bodied people might not be able to do. But it's not a gift that gets given to you as a trade-off. It's something that you typically would have to very much work hard at and really make the best of the situation.
Right, and I think he's just, obviously, he doesn't know what to do. He ain't the counselor, so he's just trying to somehow make her feel a little better about herself, about what's going on. And he just says the wrong thing.
Well, this is one of those, you know, she loses an ability that none of the rest of the crew actually has. So I think everyone, you know, including us as the audience, have difficulty truly grasping what it is that she's experiencing. Because I was trying to come up with, you know, some sort of an analogy, and the closest thing I could come up with, you know, to compare, like, Counselor Troy losing her empathic abilities would kind of be like a professional chef who loses their capability of taste or smell. It's just hard to put yourself in that situation of having lost something that we've never actually had. So it's not really a sense of loss for us. So the rest of the crew is having difficulty trying to console her with it because that's the way they normally live and they think it's no big deal.
You know, one thing I just thought of now is it would have been interesting had Dr. Crusher at least attempted to contact some doctors on Beta Z about how she could possibly, you know, have this happened before and what could be a possible solution.
Oh, I did want to make note of when they were, when Dr. And Crusher actually, was... Sorry, Doc, go ahead.
No, sorry. Just picking up on what Matt was saying, I do think that the kind of the lack of empathy that the characters have towards Troy, because they don't understand the ability, I do think it, from a certain perspective, it does make it look like Crush is a little bit too cold, right? She doesn't go out of her way to try to save this. She does shoot down a lot of suggestions that it might revert and it might get better naturally. And I think, picking up on Lou's point, I don't think that she does reach out. And I don't know whether it's just because the character doesn't consider this to be a loss, but I did find there was a disconnect there.
I mean, yeah, she was doing a lot of research, but maybe she did, and we just don't know it.
Well, I was going to say, during the examination, Riker actually says, well, you lost this ability at the exact same time we encountered this, this entity or circumstances or whatever. So, you know, the natural progression of therapy, once we are absolved of this situation, that might solve the problem. But that was just kind of one line that Riker said, and nobody ever addressed it again throughout the whole episode.
Right. Well, even Deanna says, you know, I might get better. You know, and she's trying to, and Crusher's trying to prepare her for the idea that you might not. You know, it's hope, not false hope. But what do you think of the way Deanna goes off on Will, too? But he does, you know, he does recover himself by giving her a hug.
Yeah, like you do.
Absolutely. I mean, every time Worf is not feeling good, he goes to Riker. Riker gives him a hug, and everything's just fine. Okay.
I can see Worf as being a big hugger.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll just pretend like Doc is just listening here. But anyway, no, you could, you know, one thing that Marina Sirtis does is she plays the fear that Deanna Troi has.
No, I'm just listening.
Yeah. Oh, so he really is behind on us.
Yeah, that's a good 7 seconds or so.
Right. So she does play the fear pretty good. I will give her that much. But we'll wait 7 seconds so I can ask this question. What do we all think about her attempting to resign her commission? For me, that felt like overkill.
Yeah, I have thoughts. You go ahead, Doc.
Okay.
Now I'm gonna go.
Okay, we'll see how quickly I can be picked up. very good. How far out am I, really?
Well, can you, how about now?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Yeah. So I actually don't. I don't quite like how Troy does do this big turn and does try to resign straight away. It doesn't seem like there have been that many days that have gone by. So I know that obviously the story is compressed within the television hour, but it doesn't seem like they're stuck in this position for a week or so. I think it's a very rash decision, and I think it's almost an artificial kind of a strop that they make Troy through, really not for any benefit. And I think that the story would have been better had they tried to show kind of the struggle that Troy was going through in a more subtle way, rather than have her effectively having to resign and then having to have the discussion with Guinan. Although I did like that discussion, I felt that it was a bit too much of a clumsy way to introduce that aspect into the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the Guinan thing when she... That was pretty smart of, you know, Guinan to, well, I think I'll try out for the job.
Yeah, I actually was going to comment on this too. I thought the writers missed a golden opportunity here. You know how, I've heard anyway, that the writers would write lines for Guinan, but in the event that Whoopi Goldberg was not available, they would give those lines to Troy. So I would have loved to have seen them give Guinan's lines to Troy in this episode.
Wow. Really?
Tell me that would not have been an excellent scene.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, Guinan to me is I don't know, for some, I've said this before, that I kind of wish Troy could have an unfortunate accident. But the problem is that Guinan, Whoopi could not come on the show enough to support the losing of Deanna Troy. But anyway.
No. No, I just think it would have been interesting to see a back and forth of Troy talking to herself.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see where we are. I forgot where we are here.
Oh, what did you think about Troy's talk about how the worst thing about it is how other people treat you differently?
Right. Yeah. And the funny is that it seems like Wrecker was just trying to piss her off, just to, you know, help her understand that she could do her job even without her powers.
Well, I just thought it was funny. You know, this is at my notes when she was given that, it had been less than a day.
Mm-hmm.
And she's already feeling sorry for herself because of how everybody is walking on eggshells around her. I'm like, well, this just happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay.
I don't know. I just thought it was interesting.
All right. Well, let's go to the B plot of this one. And hopefully, Doc, your computer's running okay, because it's time for you to school us and explain.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, and explain what two-dimension beings are.
Okay. This is absolute nonsense.
Well, of course it is.
Total nonsense from the beginning. I mean, it's so stupid, this kind of plot point, that there are obvious things that no one seems to notice. And I cannot believe that... I was actually expecting some of these to be flagged, but they didn't seem to be flagged. So here's the thing. So you have something that's quote-unquote, you know, two-dimensional. Although actually I think they say that it's practically two-dimensional. So it's still a one-dimensional... It's still a three-dimensional thing, but it's kind of very thin, very short. Now, if you had that, what are the chances of you running into it in space? Zero. It's just, you're not going to hit it, because you have to hit it at a at the specific angle, at the exact angle. You can't kind of roll into it because you'll see it coming. If it's a sheet and you're coming towards it at anything other than the perfect angle, you're going to see it. So how they ended up in this position is that it's like infinitesimal chances of ever this happening. Now, let's assume that you did end up in this position. If you were to look out a window from above, you would see this. If you were to look out from a window from below, you would also see it. It's only at the perfect angle that this thing would disappear. And they never acknowledge that. So, you know, for it to be two-dimensional and to be trapping you, it's almost as if it has to go through the perfect middle of the ship or perfect hit in the cells or whatever it happens to be. But it should be very easy for someone to see it if they just looked out of the window. Because, you know, it's a piece of paper, frankly. It's just a piece of paper that's entrapping the ship. And you'd see it, right? The next thing. There's nothing stopping you separating the saucer section. What's happening here? You've got something said, oh, the star drive section is stuck in this two-dimensional object. So what are we going to do? Well, how about separate the saucer section, move it upwards a little bit, and then start phasering them out of the way?
They tried phasering them.
Why that wouldn't have worked.
Oh, because they phased them at the same plane.
I found all of this kind of jaw-droppingly stupid. And in particular, I think they're losing marks.
Well, to be fair, I had that idea, too, about the saucer separation. That's why when they were looking at it on the screen, when they were twisting the Enterprise to show where the plane disappears, it's really hard to tell if that plane doesn't just kind of grab the bottom part of the saucer. Because that's what I was thinking, too, is just kind of around the neck of the ship. But it looks like it might actually, it's possible, you know, it's grabbed like that bottom deck of the saucer, so that wouldn't have been an option. But I was wondering about that myself.
Like shuttlecraft? You can get out on the shuttlecraft and start digging your way out?
But if you could get out on shuttlecraft, why couldn't they just get out themselves? Wasn't it just that there were so many of these things that they were just overpowering the ship?
Well, the probe got out.
Yeah.
I don't think any of this makes sense.
No. No, because if you...
There's no way you can...
Go ahead.
You can't run into this thing and say that it's two-dimensional without it not really being able to affect the three-dimensional ship and not being aware that by the time you've kind of gone to a deck above, you don't have this problem anymore. So this problem might be able to affect an infinitesimally small slice of the ship, but realistically, what would happen if you ran into this? It would just slice the ship in two, and then you would carry on. That's really what would happen.
Well, I don't know about carry on, but...
No. But if we're talking true two-dimensional, you'd probably slice through the atoms, and, you know, effectively, atoms are generally empty anyway, and you'd just perturb them electric fields, and then they would probably recombine afterwards. You'd probably be fine. Because... two-dimension isn't very thin. It isn't, you know, it's thinner than that. It's much, much thinner than that. And I think they mentioned something at the end where they do this weird thing where they start talking about, we've been thinking in two dimensions. Maybe we should think we've been thinking in three dimensions. So why don't we think in two dimensions? And then they put forward a solution that has nothing to do with two dimensions at all. It's really, really, really frustrating.
So the whole, you know, dress yourself up as a cosmic string makes no sense?
There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong basically saying that there's a cosmic string, which, you know, let's just consider that to be some type of vortex or some type of gravity sink or some type of field sink or whatever, and it's pulling in the Enterprise. You know, just, it's fine. They can have that. The real problem that I have is that they start playing loose with the concepts of two dimensions without really having thought it through at all.
Okay.
Because separate the saucer, take a shuttle out, look out the window and you'd see it. None of these things are addressed.
Yeah. I still don't get how a torpedo directly in their field didn't do anything. But... it's almost like they weren't in the same dimension as them. They were kind of there, but not there.
Well, actually, that would have made more sense, by the way. Had you said there's this kind of weird parallel dimension thing that's dragging us along for some reason because we happen to be coupled somehow, you know, you can get away with that. But explicitly stating these things as two-dimensional beings and then reckoning that you know your backside from your elbow, as you mention, you know, why that would cause a problem. That really is what gets me.
Okay. Now, while we're still being schooled, tell us what a cosmic string is.
Oh, I think it's completely made up.
There's no such thing, then, for real?
No, I'm pretty sure there is. I mean, if you like, I can Google that for you, but I'm pretty sure it's just made up.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So, yeah, the cosmic string, no wider than a proton. So, for all intents and purposes, it's two-dimensional as well.
Ah.
Well, no, I'd say that's one-dimensional if it's that level. So a proton's... No, actually, so you're right, because it does kind of go up as well. That's pretty small. You would probably not be able to see it. And if you do have any kind of significant force surrounding it, it's going to have had... I think that's realistically too small. You can't... You probably can't get enough matter into that space, even kind of when you're...
Poor guy.
Oh, is he gone again?
Yeah, he is.
Oh.
This time he's definitely out. And I'm going to have to be going here in about 15 minutes, so...
Yeah, we'll try to wrap it up.
Yeah, I'll have... Well, I think we're pretty much done. Well, it says cosmic strings are hypothetical one-dimension topographical defects which may have formed during a symmetry break phase transition in the early universe when the topology of the vacuum manifold associated with it. I don't know what the hell I'm even reading.
You got the wrong kind of degree for this, huh?
Definitely. I would have thought he knew what it was. Okay, let's try and get him back. And he's gone. It says busy.
Oh, he's probably trying to call you.
No, he shouldn't be.
Oh.
No, because since I'm the one who started the call, only I can get him back on.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I think... No, actually, you could too, but... Oh, man.
Yeah, I'll let you guys figure it out.
Yeah.
No, on my luck, I'll touch something and the whole thing will fall apart.
Huh?
Yeah. Hello.
Okay, I don't...
There it is.
Sorry about that. This is a complete disaster.
Yeah.
By the way, you did lose me also through a rant that I was having.
Right in the middle of it.
Right in the middle of it. I have no idea what you're going to do on this loot.
I may have to just take that last part out unless there's something else you want to try to get. Say it again.
Oh, realistically, no.
Okay, I'll let it go. Okay, well then, so... Obviously, they were trying to go toward the cosmic string, and the best solution was for the Enterprise to simulate the cosmic string, which absolutely, again, like you said, I get bored when it makes no sense, because now the Enterprise is a cosmic string. These things are heading for the cosmic string. The Enterprise is in the middle of these things, heading for the cosmic string, and so the solution is to emulate the cosmic string. Well, they're there. So now all these creatures are trying to come toward the Enterprise because it thinks it's the cosmic string, and, well, that's the way to break free. Do you think maybe the writers pinned themselves into a corner and said, no, this makes no sense to get out of it?
Unfortunately, I think the writer watched a relatively... relatively elementary documentary about string theory and walked away with the wrong end of the stick.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's also a specific mention where when this is happening, there's a bit where Riker goes, we're not talking about a violin here, or or words to the effect, at which point I know where he's coming from and what he's trying to say, and I at that point want to get violent with Riker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, the connection troubles we've been having are making me angry.
Mm. Even when he's angry, he's still happy and friendly. But, well, I mean, because I also don't get how once these creatures move off and they head toward the cosmic string, Deanna's all of a sudden automatically cured.
Yes, that's right. There's a bit where it almost suggests that there's, like, she has an overwhelming sense of emotions and it kind of like resets her. It's a weird thing, right, at the end where it's like almost, oh, there's so much joy that I've been control alt deleted and, you know, my my empathic senses have been rebooted. And I have no idea what that trying to say there. I think realistically, I think if you read around the story, that there were thoughts about keeping her without her senses kind of permanently, which I don't quite know how that would have worked. But I think that they're just trying to do a quick reset here.
Okay. Well, either way, Guinan got cheated out of a much-deserved promotion. Put Deanna in the bar slinging drinks so that Guinan be the wise person who helps the ship through. But that doesn't work out. And it's very interesting that we have two-dimensional beings that are completely flatter than a piece of paper, but yet they have intelligence and thought. Interesting enough.
Yeah. Did you see any? I was kind of interested in the logistics of what they did. They had Data and Troy in the conference room trying to figure out this problem. Then once they figured out a solution, they went out onto the bridge to have the conference to explain it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, no conference room. Well, I mean, they had to implement it quick.
Weren't there a couple? I think I noticed there were a couple of scenes where I think Troy ran to the conference room for kind of conversations that clearly weren't appropriate to be had there. Mm. So I think that they overused the conference room the observation lounge this episode.
Maybe it was a low budget one.
Lou, let me ask you a question because I know that you're going to you're going to agree with me here.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you think that the morals and the implications of losing an ability and how you react to that were handled better in Ethics?
That, yeah. Ethics obviously trumps this completely.
Mm.
I mean, that is one hell of a moral... Well, I mean, there's no real debate in this one compared to that one.
Because we're doing really the same kind of thing, right? We do have someone that has lost the ability to work under the either the cultural or the norms that they have become accustomed to.
Yeah.
And how they react to it. And to me, it just seems like one episode's a lightweight... one episode's a lightweight episode with a bit of weird science-y stuff, and the other one's like a high ethical debate that requires people to question, in addition to Worf's position and the position of his friends, you know, the ethics of scientists and stuff like that. And you couldn't get more of a divergence here. And
if Deanna was trying to kill herself because of it, then it could be a comparable story. But, you know, the whole thing hinged around Worf wanting to commit this ritual suicide that's normal for his people, and Crusher saying, by like hell he is, in which I think she was wrong. Number one, if it's his society, it's the way he wants to do it. Then you do it. Plus the fact that this doctor wants to cure him. Worf wants to do it. Fine, I won't kill myself. Let's give this a try. And she's trying to put a stop to that, too. It just, yeah, we'll get to that episode. But, yeah, no, I think that's going to... Obviously, that one there, I'll tell you now, is a 5. But this one, I'm not so sure. but, yeah, I kind of see. But, no, I think those are really different... philosophical debates.
No, sure, of course they are, but they are both founded in the idea that you have someone that is non-human with something that's been taken away from them that we don't necessarily relate to,
mm-hmm.
and they are the jumping off point for the episode.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's telling that when they try to do that with the Troy character, it very much kind of falls flat on its face. And when they try to do that with the Worf character, they're able to take it a lot more seriously. And of course, that episode, I think, is a better episode, and it digs in deeper. But I suppose, to what extent is this... You know, this isn't Troy or Marina Sirtis' fault, in a way. This is just that she's being written for in a very, very lightweight kind of sense, whereas right. Worf's being... He's faced with the same challenges, and he's been written for in a much grander sense. And so does Data, by the way. Data ends up having... You know, he has issues that come up, and he has things when he has to be... if you're talking about, like, the offspring and how that debate comes along. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, person wants to do something that's a little bit alien, and we don't quite understand why he's doing it. And it immediately launches into these great philosophical discussions. When they attempt to do that with the Troy character, it becomes almost, you know, well, we have to make sure that Troy accepts her disability nicely, and hey, you might be able to use your other senses better. And I think it's a sign of poor writing on the that is being applied to the Troy character.
I think you're right. I think in a sense that makes sense, because the humans on the ship aren't looking at Troy's issue as a physical disability. Whereas for her, for being Betazoid, that it is very much a physical disability. Whereas Worf is a clearly visible physical disability that a Klingon just can't possibly accept. So I think, yeah, you're right. It makes sense if they had treated Deanna's loss as a physical disability instead of more of a mental one, then it would have made more sense to have these philosophical debates. But anyway, I gots to push on, guys. Secret Life of Pets is waiting for us. So all you that just heard that, yes, we are going to see the Secret Life of Pets today. So I have to push on. Okay, so I think we're pretty much to the end. The cosmic, entities go to the cosmic stream. Deanna feels better. Ensign Brooks finally was able to cry. And that's it.
What did you think of that very last scene right there where Riker goes in for the kiss?
It's typical.
Seemed kind of out of place for the situation, but...
Definitely. So it makes you wonder if they're having, like, a secret relationship in the side, or... No, he's just being a friend, being supportive, and, you know, tried to get in her pants one more time.
No, I do like the bit where I think Troy mentioned, is this how you handle all your personnel crisis? Mm-hmm. And... He makes an old joke about Worf and how far a cuddle would go, but there's a part of me that, you know, thinks that Riker's probably going, yeah, actually, probably I should probably stop hitting on the ensigns, right? I accept it.
Right. Yeah, who knows? Maybe he's already hit on Ensign Brooks, but she is, after all, single now.
Maybe that's why she was crying. I don't know.
Yeah. What's that, James?
Too soon, even for Riker, surely.
Right. He'll wait a couple more months eventually. Ensign Brooks, fascinating to see you here in your quarters. What are you doing here? I just happened to be coming by, and I thought I'd stop for a visit. Anyway, no, I'm kidding. Riker would never go stoop that low. Geordi might. Okay, so let's go on.
Okay, one final thing, which is that there's a bit, this is jumping back a bit, but it was in my notes. It was the only bit that's still there that hasn't been ticked off. And I suspect it might have come up during one of the phases where I'd been abducted by the internet and demons. But there's a bit where Picard seems to suggest that you can pipe in the movement of the two-dimensional being into the universal translator. And get something out. And that's like, it's like, oh, look, those people over there are doing the Macarena. Put it through the universal translator. I want to understand what they're doing. How does that work? That makes no sense.
Well, leave no stone unturned. I mean, you know, it could have been the answer to the problem. So, I mean, you can't, you know, it wasn't, but it could have been.
At the back of my mind, I try to rationalize how I think the universal translator has to work, and I just can't square linguistic communication with expressive dance in the same you know, in the same computer program. I mean, I suppose perhaps by the 24th century they've solved this, but it's something that, that really stumps me.
Well, they could have tried one solution. That was to blast some Twisted Sister or Motley Crue out the ship speakers. That might have, you know, tensed up the creatures enough to get away.
Well, yeah, I did have that done. Did you remember the scene where they were firing the torpedoes and the camera just stayed on Picard the whole time?
Mm-hmm.
Where you could just see it in his face, the anguish of having to give that order?
Yeah.
That one I thought was played pretty well.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, he's trying his best to not to hurt these things. It's not their fault that they ended up like they are. They just don't want to end up with them. But that makes sense. Okay. Is there anything else, guys, that I'm missing? Besides my movie?
Nope, I think that's about it for me.
And you know what's really funny? Is that through the power of the internet, guys, don't forget that I was able to give you my thoughts on The Secret Life of Pets while we were recording Final Mission last week. Keep that in mind, you guys. I'm not even going to tell you how we did that, because it's pretty damned obvious. So,
spooky action at a distance.
Yes, it is. It was pretty spooky. So it's now time to give our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being ethics. Matt, let's start with you. What do you rate this, and where do you come for your final thoughts?
All right, so the episode did have some good points. I mean, you know, yes, I think Troy was written pretty poorly in this, and I think the direction was probably not as good as it could have been. She really did come off, you know, come across as kind of whiny and pouty, and, you know, I had to go back through my notes and count how many times I wrote down she storms out of the room. So, you know, on that account, it wasn't the greatest, but it did have some interesting things to think about, you know, the idea of, you know, becoming disabled by losing an ability that nobody else has anyway. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting mind game to play, you know, trying to put yourself in the situation that you just can't. I mean, I have no idea what it would be like to lose empathic powers, because I've never had empathic powers. So, you know, but just the general idea of, you know, trying to deal with a disability, I liked where the writers were trying to go there, but I don't think that it came across as well as it could have. So overall, I think this episode, I'd give it about a 2 out of 5.
Okay. Let me put that down for 2 out of 5 for Matt. Okay. And I don't want to end this episode on too bad of a note. So honestly, again, I was kind of bored. I never really got much out of this episode. Perhaps, you know, maybe if I lose my empathic sense, I'll know what it's like. But humans do adapt to changes and hardships, so I kind of felt like boo-hoo-hoo, woe was me. I'm not sure I really buy into the whole thing. She could still have done her job. It's instinct now instead of empathic skills. But the cosmic string thing is really bad. I don't, Doc, you said it all when you said there's no way this could possibly be. Okay. Sorry, I had to stop someone. But then again, you know, when you lose something, it could be drastic. You know, maybe, God forbid, I lose my wiping hand because the other hand just can't reach where the good hand can. So, I don't know. Maybe there will be a problem after all.
That's an interesting analogy. I have to give you credit. I didn't consider that one.
Yeah. I certainly can never lose my left hand because life is over as I know it. But other than that, it's not a very good episode. So I'm with Matt. I'm giving this one a 2 as well. So what about you, James?
Hey, wiping hand. Oh, crap. yeah, I think this is a poor episode. I think it's poor writing towards the Troy character, and I really think it's episodes like this that really show. I think they build up the hatred towards Troy, because I don't think she was very well served by the story. And I kind of came up with the parallels to ethics, because in a very, very similar situation, Worf was much better served. And you could have flipped these stories around. You could have really made the stakes as high. And they choose not to. They choose to make the fluffy kind of why are you so hysterical woman story about Troy and the honor and brave and soul-searching questions about Worf. And I think it's kind of shows poor writing from the show's perspective. However, I kind of feel that we are in this really weird world where I think that season four Trek, though, is still pretty tight in general. I think the way they've obviously got their formula down and they can publish this stuff out week on week. And I think that overall, it still does a fairly decent job of being an entertaining 45 minutes. I mean, we're not hitting the lows of season one or anything like that. They've also got, the two storylines, and although I think one of them, the two-dimensional being, is complete nonsense and they could have got out of it immediately, it is still a relatively entertaining thing they have on the side that I think at least works structurally, even though you might have questions about the science. I have to say, we didn't have a chance to speak about things acted on instinct, but honestly, the less time I have to rant about why that was ridiculous as well, probably the better. I mean, overall, I think I'd sum this episode up as kind of wasted opportunities rather than anything else. I don't think it's actively hostile, unless you're like me and you start picking up on this two-dimensional being things acting on instinct, heading towards a nice little cosmic string. But I think it's clear. I think it's lost opportunities, and I think that it's unfortunate that it wasn't better. And I think it could have been a lot better with only a few tweaks. I am going to agree with both of you, and I do think it comes in as a 2 out of 5, which on my rating is a meh, I think.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me.
I can't quite give it a 1 thumbs up, so it's a meh.
Meh. Okay. All right, Matt, it was good to meet you and get you on the show. So
I appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Good. That's what we're attempting. We'll probably have the season 5 schedule out somewhere around September. So far, we're due to wrap up the season at the end of October, so probably want to get a good start on it somewhere in September. So be looking out for season 5 and pick what you want, whatever is available at the time. They seem to go very quick.
And I was just looking through them. There's a lot of good ones in that season, too.
Yes, yes. And in fact, really, season 4, for the next, I think for the next quite a few episodes, I'm predicting some good, very strong 4s, if not 5s, coming up. So we got a very strong area of the season that we're going to be going into. So I'm looking forward to them. So thank you again.
A joyous day on the Enterprise.
It is my honor to unite together two people.
But for Commander Data, it's the beginning of a struggle to find his place in the universe.
I need your help.
Data, it's not that simple.
Forever isolated in a human world.
I believe I have much to offer a potential mate.
Will he ever feel life's most cherished emotions? Find out on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
All right, everyone, so why don't you join us next week as we review Season 4, Episode 11, and that's going to be Data's Day. And we're going to have Colin on for that, so we're looking forward to the news and views, man. Colin himself. So everyone, take care and good night.
Good night.
Good night.